You are about to take a bite of White Apple Wisdom. The students and veterans who produce the White Apple Institute talk show encourage others with learning, mental, and invisible disabilities to ask Dr. Applewhite about how we can prevent dropout and burnout from school, work, and life. Stay tuned so you can encourage others and yourself to take a bite of White Apple Wisdom to change the perception of disabled to differently abled and succeed in the workforce. Learn more about us and support our mission at www.whiteappleinstitute.org or call us at 888-56-APPLE. That's 888-56-APPLE.
Good morning. This is Dr. Denita Applewhite, and I'm coming to you with lots of love and lots of peace. This is going to be a great show this morning. We have Beverly Johnson, supermodel, to speak with us today about the perceptions of beauty and disability. The Ask Dr. Applewhite radio talk show is brought to you by White Apple Institute. White Apple Institute is there to help students and veterans with disabilities to succeed at work, succeed at school. So we put it out there for you to join us in accepting the challenge to change the perception of disabled to differently able. So to keep this radio show going and all of the services that we provide, we ask that you click on that donate button at White Apple Institute. That's www.whiteappleinstitute.org. And we also hope that you'll listen to the show and share this show, the knowledge that's going to come through from not only Beverly Johnson, but we have a number of other guests that will be joining us this morning. And we want you to stay tuned for our veterans, my fellow veterans that will be coming on towards the end of the show with their commentary on image and perceptions of beauty and disability. Now, we're not just talking about beauty this morning. We're talking about productivity, too, because remember that we are very, very focused on helping people to succeed at work and school. So, of course, the first thing that we want to make sure that we get out there is changing the image and perception. But what does disabled look like? We still have not defined that. I haven't even defined what normal looks like, have you? So today during the show, that's what I'd like you to think about, is when you think of the term disabled, do you picture in your mind a person who is productive, that is capable of working, going to school, having a family, living independently? And most of all, do you picture someone, perceive someone as beautiful when you hear the word disabled? So what I'd like you to do is get deep into that this morning and really think about how you perceive that, because how you perceive disability and the term disabled. Give your time to our special guest. Beverly Johnson, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So sorry about those technical difficulties here. But I really, really am so happy that you wanted to join us today on the Ask Dr. Applewhite radio talk show. And today, I hope you heard that introduction that I was giving. Were you able to hear that?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did hear.
We want people to walk away from this show with really a better understanding of what the term disabled means. And I think that you can help us so much with not only your background as a supermodel, but also your background as someone who has been very compassionate about helping people with disability understand their beauty. And I just hug you and appreciate you for that. Thank you so much for being here this morning. Can you tell us a little bit about your background as, you know, I know you have a video out there that talks a little bit about your childhood and how you came up. But what really pushed you into looking at yourself and saying, okay, I'm a beautiful person, and I can actually become this model?
Oh, well, that's very interesting. As a child, I grew up in Buffalo, New York. My father was a steel laborer, and my mother was a nurse. And I was an athlete, a swimmer. And basically, my whole life was about sports. And I didn't have any realization at the time growing up that I was pretty or could be a model. I wanted to be a political science major and a lawyer. I was spurred on by watching the civil rights movement on television in the 60s.
Really? And, okay. Yeah.
And this is how I got my sense of passion for the underdog, let's call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that time period. Because we're about the same age there, that time period was made quite an impact on many of us that were able to see ourselves as an instrument of change. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, because that's why I look at you. You have been an instrument of change. You have taken something in, and I'm just going to share something real personal that I felt when I reviewed your background and just looked at why is it that having Beverly Johnson on the show was so very, very important. And I'll tell you what it is. Because when I look at the image of what we've tried to do, the perception of what we've tried to change with people looking at those with disabilities, and employers changing their perception of how they interview and train and retain employees with disabilities, looking at how educators, treat students, and some of them deny accommodations because they're not clear on what disability looks like, okay? When I put all those things together as an educator, okay, I see that part of it, and then I saw another part of it that, my God, Beverly Johnson changed the perception of African-American women, okay, of African-Americans, period, of black people looking at themselves as beautiful.
Yes.
And that's what makes what you've done so special, because those two things, believe it or not, and I know some of my listeners out there are going to say, hey, what are you talking about? The Department of Labor actually puts black disabled women on the lowest level of employability.
Yes.
Isn't that something?
That's correct.
And you have been definitely an instrument of change in that. So thank you so much for being part of that. Tell us a little bit about what you feel is very important for us to remember. Because we've got all types of listeners out there. We've got parents, we've got employers listening, educators, and thank goodness, Beverly, we have some people from Chase Bank, which is responsible for our meeting. They're on the line, too.
Well, wonderful. I feel that discrimination in any form is wrong. And mm-hmm. I'm the international spokesperson for the Global Down Syndrome Foundation mm-hmm. because I have a niece and I had a first cousin that had Down syndrome. And mm-hmm. just going through that experience with my sister, my younger sister, and how my niece was discriminated against, you know, getting into the school systems, and just on an everyday basis of looking at someone that is different from you,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And automatically thinking that they are less than you.
Mm-hmm.
So. I personally go about my life and seeing the God in everyone. And,
oh, wow.
And also, I think it's my responsibility to make sure that everyone is able to reach their full potential. Isn't that what life is about?
Yes.
Is that that we all reach our full potential, and that we by doing that, we're helping one another to achieve that. And basically, that's how I live my life.
And it's unfortunate that when we're speaking like this, that most of the world, two-thirds, I would say, do not understand what you're even saying, what you and I are saying right now. Because when someone is born with any type of disability, like your niece or any of the 6,000 babies that are born every year with Down syndrome, and not even mentioning the millions born with any type of mental health disorder. They are put into institutional settings, cast off from their families, okay? We, unfortunately, here in America, do not have the best system that, we have the best system I've seen in the world, okay? However, we're still not as effective as we wish to be. And that's why we still have these protests that not only Black lives matter, but disabled lives matter.
Yes, exactly. And you see it, it's just amazing to me that, you know, people will listen to your program and people that aren't disabled will listen to your program, and they find it difficult to see how to feel that they can't help, that they can't do anything about it. But I think that it's just in one's everyday acts of kindness that can make just a world of difference. In the way of being kind to someone in a wheelchair or being assistant to someone and not ignoring them as being human beings on the planet. You know, it's those kind of simple human kindnesses, besides, you know, all the legislatures that we continue to need for disabled people. But it's those small, and being in a world where image is this whole idealized image of beauty that warps the minds of young kids coming up, because there's this standard set that they can't possibly achieve, or nor should they want to, of being either super thin or not feeling they're a part of if they don't look a certain way. You know, at my in my decade in the 70s was if you weren't blonde and blue eyed, you weren't part of the Madison Avenue sensibilities of beauty. And now it's, you know, if you're not, you know, 90 pounds and super thin, that, you know, so it's very, I always say that it's really important that we are very conscious of the images that we put out there, and that we become an inclusive society as be respectful of diversity, as opposed to just having one standard of beauty.
You know, when we talk about standards and norms, and you know, in the world of psychology, we set up norms. We understand that norms are based on what the society puts out there as what we call normal, and when the students are constantly asking, and this happened just recently, that a student stood up, very, very beautiful student in the audience. I was speaking at a college, and her outer beauty was just stunning, just like yours. And when she stood up, she said, "This is the first time publicly that I've ever admitted that I have a disability. That all my life I've had a speech impediment. It was difficult for me to speak. During my childhood years, I was teased and laughed at." And she said, I never wanted to really talk about it. And so you see, when you look at her, and one of the young men in the audience said, "My God, you don't look disabled." Okay, and so that led to the conversation of I don't know how many students were there, over 100 students, of what does disabled really look like?
Yes.
How can you really define it? It's not the wheelchair, because less than a third of the people that are disabled are not in wheelchairs or in walkers,
yes,
or smart things, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I just felt this overwhelming question of what are we supposed to tell people? What are we supposed to tell our children, this millennial generation, of what disability looks like? What is normal?
Well, you know, I think that basically, you know, we're all children of God. And
yes.
And we are all children of God, whether it's the very elderly that are being shunned and mistreated, or all of the other disabilities. I think that, you know, we really have to respect each other as human beings, and, you know, mm-hmm, and to look further, you know, at people's souls as opposed to some kind of exterior being, or a being that is different. Sometimes,
yeah,
I think they're different than us, you know, not so much disabled, but, you know, different. And
you said
and
a moment ago.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes. No. I'm just saying that, you know, we always look for the differences, and we never look for what we all have in common. And, you know, we all,
yes,
have in common that we want to live a life of health and happiness, and love for our friends and family. So we basically have so much more in common than we do being different from one another. That's
extremely,
all.
Extremely good point. And when you know what I like that you spoke about a moment ago is that image of God, you know, without any religious undertones or overtones. I think basically everyone can agree that there's something that's very special within all of us. That's a commonality,
yeah,
that you just mentioned, okay? And if we ignore what this outer costume is, okay, because that's what we put so much emphasis in, don't you think, Beverly? We put so much emphasis on what we look like on the outside instead of being in touch with that inside. And I'll tell you, working with the most severely so-called disabled in institutional settings, and I have still found that image of God. I have still found that exchange of love when,
sure,
you go beyond outer costume. Have you found,
yes,
that too?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember as a model, because, you know, as a model, and I started very young, I was 18 years old, you know, I was,
mm-hmm,
on my way to college and went to college for a year, and then it took this turn where this opportunity presented itself. I mean, someone said you made $75 an hour. My father didn't make $75 a week. So for me, it was something that I could not, you know, look a gift horse in the mouth and just turn my nose up at it. I thought that it was worth investigating. And so I did that. And I did that with the same passion that I would have done any job, I like to think. That, you know, I researched it, I studied, you know, the designers, the photographers, because I didn't know what this whole big deal was about, being a model. So I really invested myself in a way and into that career. And then there came a moment, because it's very all about the physical being, you know, you're not eating, and, you know, they're not, you know, that results in bulimia and anorexia. But everything became so exterior. And I literally found myself, you know, waking up one day and being emotionally stunted, meaning that I had grown as a woman, you know, and now I'm in my 20s.
Yes.
But emotionally and spiritually, I was still that of a 17, 18-year-old girl. And I realized that because of my friend, my best friend back home, who was in her 20s, who had a you know, the house and the family and the job, and she's dealing with things, and I'm like, holy, you know, and I had to make a conscious effort to stop that. Now I'm looking on the inside of Beverly. I felt like I had a lot of catching up to do. And basically, I went on that journey. I went on that journey to find out about my roots, who I was, where I came from, my history, my parents, and also to reconnect with that spiritual side, which I've always had all my life, but ignored for many years, you know, chasing this quest of perfection.
You know, it's interesting when you use that word reconnect and reconnecting with ourselves, because we have one of our board members, Nazim Rashid, wrote a book on Reconnected, and it really helps us to understand. We use a lot of that in our curriculum to understand more about changing perception and image within ourselves. And that's the most important thing, I think. When I would like to hear from you about how we can change the perceptions of employers, of corporations, of educational institutions, to make it a more welcoming atmosphere. But before you answer that, I just want to make sure our listeners understand, too, that we cannot change anyone's perception. We say change, but what we're doing is encouraging them to change their own perceptions. Because we can't do anything. Even Dr. Martin Luther King said that. You can have the laws, but you can't change the hearts. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so we have to work on changing the way we look at ourselves, okay?
Yes.
Because we don't look at ourselves as valuable. You use that word, the value. If we don't look at ourselves as beautiful, then we cannot expect anyone else to look at us that way. So that the first starts with us. And then secondly, we start to impact employers. So tell me for a moment, I shared a story with you about a woman who had a daughter with Down syndrome, and the family was very supportive, and it sounds like you've been very supportive to your niece and other people. But when they go out in the real world, it changes because people don't look at them the same way. How do you deal with your niece?
Well, you try to, for instance, I try to, we're going to a conference, a Down syndrome conference in Arizona, and my niece is flying in, and I'm speaking at this conference. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important to be with people of like minds, so that one doesn't feel that they are all alone. Because they're not. And so that gives her a sense of, hey, you know, this, you know, I'm not alone. There are people that are dealing with this the same way I am, and look how they're managing, you know, and they and so that they have their role models that they look up to. I think that's very important. And I think that on a personal basis, is one of the reasons why I really love The Voice, that television show, The Voice, so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because the judges aren't able to see who's singing. So they cannot judge.
I didn't realize that.
They look. No, their backs are to the singer, to the contestant.
Ah,
and they can only turn around by what they hear. Not what they see, not how they're acting, not how they look, but what they hear. And it's really interesting when they turn around and they have this sense of discovery. And then that's what we all need to have, is a sense of discovery about ourselves and also about other people.
Yes.
And so I think that those are qualities that I think could help, is a sense of discovery and a sense of people being with people that are like them and how they are handling the challenges.
Well, one of the things I hope in the future is that what you're bringing to us today, in closure, because I know that you have an appointment this morning. And if you can stay on the line a little longer, that's great because their switchboard is lit up and there's a lot of people that have many, many questions. But many of them, because I know you're going to come back and join us again, right?
Yes, I will. I would love to come back and join you. It's a fascinating conversation, I must say.
Well, thank you for, this is what I want to say to you, is that what you've opened up for us is that association is very important. And that's what you're saying, is that I think that's what White Apple Institute is all about, is that what we're trying to do is join with the organizations like the Global Down Syndrome Foundation and many, many others to bring more of a sense of I'm not alone, okay,
yes.
That there are other people that are dealing with this. And even though we know, just like I was telling the students in this speech, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines disabled as one who cannot occupy employment, okay,
mm-hmm.
or survive an independent living. Isn't that something? It's right there in a dictionary. So I'm saying to them, you know, we can't go back and beat up Merriam-Webster. We can't go back and change the way that things have been as far as the way perceptions were developed. But we can change from right now, change within ourselves. And so
yeah.
What you've given us, too, is that we need to associate with each other. And hopefully this radio show and the other things that we're doing and the things that you're doing, Beverly Johnson, out there, will help us to push that word out there.
Well, so thank you so much, Doctor. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. You're one of my heroes. You're doing
you.
God's work and making a difference, for sure.
Thank you so much, and thank you for making a difference, my dear sister.
Thank you for joining our show and taking a bite of White Apple Wisdom. Your donations support students and veterans with disabilities. It helps them to manage their emotional and financial crises, prevent dropout from school, work, and life, and most importantly, to change the perception of disabled to differently abled. Learn more about us at www.WhiteAppleInstitute.org or call 888-562-APPLE. That's 888-562-7753. Much love and peace.